This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Doug Pollard here with another magazine of news and current affairs for the Rainbow crew. And my thanks to Tim Newton for filling in while I was away in sunny far north Queensland. We can't go past Matthew Mitchum's gold medal in the Olympics this week. Of course, even confirmed Olympic phobes like Kay Sirrah noticed Matthew Mitchum's epic triumph in the diving, and his even greater triumph in acknowledging, hugging and kissing his partner Lachlan on Seven's Evening News. An event Nine News, however, referred to in passing as getting a hug from a friend. Prompted by this touching display, today the Herald Sun ran another piece by Rob Mitchell, who listeners know as a regular guest on this show, in which Rob urged the AFL once again to get with the programme and start tackling homophobia in their sport. It's the latest in a series the papers run on this issue, with comment from Nathan Burke, Kevin Sheedy, and most recently Jason Ackermanis. There's speculation that the AFL is doing a John the Baptist, paving the way for an AFL player to come out. In the last couple of days, the internet has been buzzing with rumours that the Footy Show has negotiated a big payout to an AFL player to come out on the Footy Show later tonight. Everyone here has got their fingers crossed, I think. The Rainbow Report has already interviewed representatives from the VCFL, the VFL, the AFL, but we've never managed to talk to a player. So far, still no luck. But however, tonight we have managed to secure Pippa Grange, who is, and I love this job title, General Manager of People, Psychology and Culture at the AFL Players Association, for her take on the issue. But she's made it very clear she won't talk about any individual people. Leaving football aside, Corey Earlham from the Australian Coalition for Equality joins us to report on the progress of the Family Law Amendment Bill, which passed the lower house today. In the Senate, the bill was stalled, you may remember, by the opposition calling an inquiry, and that report of that inquiry is also out this afternoon. And staying with politics, the newly elected senator from WA, Louise Pratt, made her maiden speech in Parliament yesterday. In it, she called for the legalisation of gay marriage and the removal of discrimination affecting gays, lesbians and transgender folk. Her partner is transgender, in fact. She'll be joining us on the line. And we have a special report on Barack Obama's surprise appearance at the Democrat convention from our correspondent over there. Given that we're talking footy again tonight, I did ask if Caroline Wilson might be available, but somehow I've ended up with Tim Wilson of the Institute of Public Affairs. Never mind, at least it's radio, so no one will see if I try to pick him up by the crotch. Welcome tonight, Tim. And rounding out the panel tonight, the one and only Richard Watts, the editor of MCV, who coincidentally had their own AFL scoop this week.
Hello, Doug. Nice to be back. Corey, Tim.
Nice to see you all, and I think I'm much prettier than Caroline Wilson, so...
I didn't want to say that.
She doesn't have balls to be pulled
that's
up.
That's right. I was about to say, I think you'd much rather grope me than her.
Well, I was going to say that.
That was an invitation, by the way.
Yeah, of course, of course. You know, and you're so pretty when you blush, anyway. Now, we were all very happy when the Rudd government got elected and they were got to work immediately. Well, most of us anyway, Tim. And they got to work immediately tackling discrimination with a bill to deal with superannuation. But unfortunately, the opposition threw up a load of objections, predictably enough, mainly by talking about protecting marriage, like that old chestnut. Corey Earlham of the Australian Coalition for Equality has been closely involved following this and lobbying on the issue. And today, Corey, it was a very important day for this bill, wasn't it?
It was a day where somebody from Canberra sent me an email going, Corey, it truly does recognise the fact that we have a new government.
And why is that?
Well, what happens, many of your listeners may remember that the inquiry into same-sex entitlements covered a couple of things, one of which was access to the family court. Mm-hmm. That report was tabled today at 9:45 in the Senate, and at 10:30 it was started to be debated in the House of Representatives. It's a bit unusual process, but that was because of the opposition referring everything around these Heriot recommendations mm-hmm. to the Senate inquiry. 100% of the committee, four Labor senators, one Green senator and three Coalition senators all said in their report that the government should turn around and recognise the co-mother of a same-sex relationship as the parent of that child.
So we're talking about a lesbian couple here.
Lesbian couple?
And the co-mother is the one who did not give birth to the child.
Correct.
Reading this jargon.
Non-biological.
Correctly. Non-biological.
So for technical people out there interested in this, they made a recommendation that 60H of the Family Law Act should be amended to allow children in same-sex relationships to be recognised as a child of the relationship for the purposes of the entire Family Law Act. In making this recommendation, the committee recognises that the interests of the children must be of paramount consideration, end quote. To get three senators, including one of the most conservative senators still behind the marriage ban in 2004 to support this, truly does show where Australia's moved towards and actually are supporting same-sex couples as equal.
Now, what impact will that have when it comes to voting and the fact that they've got unanimity on the committees? That, does that have an influence, do you think? Or will that we still see a few Neanderthals getting up on their hind legs in the Senate and saying no, no, no?
Look, there's still going to be people that have a view of that. It all comes down to whether the opposition moves towards having a conscious vote on this, which is probably likely, and that's okay. That still gives us enough wiggle room for moderate members of the opposition to come forward and support these recommendations, if and only if the government accepts these recommendations. We still have to get this passed the government. They have to say, yes, we agree with this, we agree with the way you're going about this committee.
So it still has to get past Kevin, in other words.
Kevin is a control freak. It's already gone past him and he's already said yes if it's been in the committee report. There's not going to be a conscience vote. I'm willing to put money down about it, and I suspect you'll see almost the entire parliament do it. Unlike the Labor Party, at least Liberal Party members do have a right to exercise a conscience vote regardless of whether one is called or not. I would be surprised, because you know the mantra from a lot of the advocates against same-sex marriage, many of times which I've disagreed with, have always said it's about protecting children and putting their interests first. There is no way you could argue that discriminating against a child by saying that their mother should not be recognised for legal purposes is in the interest of the best child. I think you're going to see no opposition to this bill whatsoever in the end. Maybe Barnaby Joyce, but he's a gnat, and nobody knows what he does.
What about Steve Fielding?
I reckon Steve Fielding will probably go down the same track as well. Okay. I think so.
And Nick Xenophon will probably have an each way bet.
Look, the thing I really want to put out there, and I want to say this, is that the New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, and in particular another submission by Professor Jenny Milbank, really led the charge of this. They really put a lot of time and effort into their Senate inquiry submission, turning around and saying that this is what should be done, and it was very effective to be able to bring it off. So it just goes to show that individuals and organisations spending the time for Senate inquiries can affect change.
What about, in terms of individuals, what about the, I guess, the flip side of the argument, rather people arguing against these kind of legislative changes? How effective were their submissions coming in from the religious right, for example?
Completely weak. The most conservative argument came from the Archdiocese of Adelaide, and if you read the Hansard transcript, you'll see that members of the opposition actually questioned what they were saying as not being reflective from the entire Catholic faith, that many people do support in principle some of these changes, but they were taking perhaps one person's interpretation of a papal statement.
The other aspect of this that I'm always curious about is there is a preconception amongst the GLBT community and others that the religious right are very well organised in terms of mass submissions on issues such as law reform when it comes to recognising same-sex couples and same-sex families, for example. Were they indeed bombarding the Senate inquiry with submissions, or is that a bit of a furphy? They're not as well organised as we've been led to believe.
It's an interesting question you tried to get me to answer that I can't really say one way or the other. What I can say to you is that they are very organised, they do have a lot of resources, and they can mobilise people. What I can also say to you is that 71% of Australians support these changes. So when you put those two together, people aren't going to say something that they don't support.
I also think we need to drop the term religious right, because it's actually not reflective of reality. It's often religious people, not religious right-wing people per se. That's a very barbed term we've brought over from the United States. There are actually religious people on the left who sometimes oppose recognition of same-sex equality for different reasons. Recently, I was on a program where I was debating a left-wing Catholic who actually opposed same-sex marriage for her own religious grounds. So maybe we could stick to just religious rather than trying to add political tones to it as well.
However, I would say, Tim, that the majority of people who actually turn around and rally this charge do come from the right, and they may get support from the left.
It depends on who you talk. Well, that might be true too, but also depends on what you interpret of the right. And sometimes there are people who are big government people, which is a more of a tend of the left. advocating for these things. So I think it's the politics of it's very different from the religious element.
Yeah. Now you said that there were some additional amendments by opposition members of the committee that the coalition is not particularly comfortable with. What did you have in mind there?
There's a couple of things. The five recommendations that were made by the entire committee were supported by the entire committee. The opposition recommended two additional things, which were around ensuring that people couldn't be seen as being in a de facto relationship for two relationships, therefore polygamy. And if you really want to have a laugh, read Bronwyn Bishop's debate today, because everybody, including members of the opposition, I think, were having a laugh at the outrageous statement that Grandma was saying.
What was she saying?
She was saying that this is going to open the door to polygamy and that we can't recognise this. She hasn't read the Family Law Act that actually does recognize overseas polygamy as marriage for the purposes of the Family Law Act, but doesn't recognize it as a marriage. The Family Law Act's about protecting people who are a weaker party in a relationship. So it's important that many different scenarios are catered for and we're not too restrictive in there, which is why we're pushing the fact that, you know, children who are being recognised as children for the purposes of property division, which is what this bill has done, but not recognising them as children for the purposes of being children, their parents being parents, is just outrageous. And thankfully, the committee agrees with us.
Now, you mentioned earlier on, we were talking about co-mothers. We were talking about two lesbians with children. What's the situation with two gay men with children?
Look, it's a bit of a grey area exactly what the committee is saying there. What they've said is that amending 60H, because the birth mother's partner is being brought into this, will allow for co-mothers. But for co-fathers, they're saying that the current term for product of a relationship is the best way forward to continue with. And this was the big controversy during the Senate inquiry about product of the relationship and what that really meant. Until such time as there's nationally consistent surrogacy laws. We've just had a report from Tasmania this week saying that they'll introduce non-discriminatory surrogacy laws. New South Wales is doing an inquiry. Obviously, we've got the Victorian law reform coming up later this month, so that's already happening. But until such time that there's national consistency, let's have that still product of relationship protect gay men and their children.
And what about families which don't fit that kind of that model of just two parents, where there are three parents involved or perhaps four parents involved in a family, i.e. a gay man and a lesbian couple, or a gay man and his partner and a lesbian couple?
It's an interesting question, Richard, that the Victorian Law Reform Commission struggled with when they looked at their report, and they didn't go anywhere towards recognising those multiple parents.
No, I think a lot of people struggle with that one. It's like
that might be feeding somebody like Bronwyn Bishop to start demanding that in the moment.
I know situations where, for in effect, the sperm donor to a lesbian couple wishes to remain involved in the upbringing of the child, but at the moment there's absolutely no mechanism. Legal mechanism, as it were, to recognise that kind of tripartite parenting.
And I think this is about incremental steps. You need to look at things to just get the norm or the majority of people covered, and then these extra bits that aren't covered off you need to really consider, because there's a lot of legal issues around what is the legal relationship between more than two parents, etc.
Well, we're doubtless going to hear a good deal more about this. What's the next stage? What happens next?
So it passed the Senate, passed the House of Representatives this afternoon about 1 o'clock. I anticipate it will probably go to the Senate. It might be talked about next week, or it might be talked about in 3 weeks' time after they come back from their 1 week break.
Right.
It's unclear whether the government's going to accept these amendments and put them into this bill. Yeah. If they do that, that's probably a more positive way to get these changes through than saying we're going to do it later on in the omnibus bill that's scheduled to come up later on in this spring sitting.
Okay, well, we're going to leave that one there for now.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Informing, entertaining and provoking, this is the Rainbow Report.
Yeah, and Doug Pollard here with me in the studio, Tim Wilson, Corey Earlham and Richard Watts. We've had a couple of SMSs in, one of which is fairly straightforward. It says, can I ask Tim if Barack Obama gets elected, will the IPA invite him to Australia?
It's not my decision, but somehow I think the US president probably has better things to do than accept invitations from the Institute of Public Affairs, despite the fine organisation that it is.
And one here I don't understand. None of us understand this one. We've been looking at it. It says, will there be an Aussie-Greek PM with Barak's victory in the US? If anyone can enlighten me as to what that's supposed to mean, I'd love to know.
Possibly an Australian-born Prime Minister of Greece or a Greek-born Prime Minister of Australia. Open for interpretation.
Oh, if I can't like think of any cabinet that's Greek.
Do let us know. Now, we've been banging on about sport on this programme for a while, and in particular AFL football being one of the last holdouts when it comes to accepting diversity. But lately the ground seems to have started to shift rather rapidly. We've talked to lots of officials from various levels of football. So far, sadly, not to any current player, and that's not going to change tonight. But with us on the line, we do have Pippa Grange, who's the General Manager for People, Psychology and Culture at the AFL Players Association. Good evening, Pippa.
Hi, Doug. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Now, start off, can you just explain to me what a General Manager of People, Psychology and Culture does?
It's the longest title in the world, isn't it?
It's amazing. you must have very long business cards.
That's right. The main part of my job is providing psychology services for players and their families for off-field issues that they deal with as part of their career and as part of life generally. So I work with them on issues that range from managing stress through their career and depression and anything such as that, and right the way through to injury or relationship issues and it can be a whole range of things that any of us deal with in life generally.
Yeah, now, obviously we don't want to get into talking about specific individuals and things, but I think a lot of that you just talked about there, like relationships issues and stress and so on and so forth, would be the kind of thing that a gay AFL player would have to face probably more than a heterosexual AFL player?
Certainly, yeah, I would agree with you, yeah. I would say that would definitely be the case if they weren't out and comfortable with their sexuality in a workplace.
Now, again, without giving anything away, have you been called upon to advise anyone in that situation?
Not a current AFL player. No, I haven't been in that position where I've had to deal with somebody who's currently on the list in that position.
Former then.
I'm not going to give you that.
Right, so the answer is yes.
Okay, fine. We'll move on swiftly there.
Guys, there's sort of 700, you know, the 700 sure. listed players, you'd imagine that there would be a degree of those people who were same-sex attracted.
Sure. Richard Watts.
Pippa, Richard Watts here, the editor of MCV. The fact that you haven't dealt with a current player coming to you with sexuality issues, what does that say about the culture, perhaps, of the AFL? Does it reinforce the fact that there is a homophobic culture there which is preventing somebody even acknowledging it to you, let alone to the rest of their club, that they may be same-sex attracted? Or do you interpret that in other ways?
Well, it may not be that it's me that they talk to. They may have other mechanisms of support if that's the case. But look, I think that it's difficult for any young man in an environment to deal with their sexuality if they feel that sexuality might not be wholly accepted. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly, I would certainly say that has been the case over the years. But what I would encourage people to consider now with AFL players is that they have had a lot of exposure to education and training around respect and responsibility and diversity that I think has encouraged them to move away from unthinking custom and practice, unthinking habits and unthinking opinion, and really develop their own opinion. And in knowing that I was going to speak to you guys tonight, I actually spoke to a couple of players today about what they thought about this issue, whether if somebody was gay in their club, would they be accepted? Would there be pressure for them to keep it quiet, or would they be openly accepted? And unanimously, with the guys that I spoke to, they said, well, look, you know, we judge him on other things, really. If he can kick the footy and if he's a decent bloke, we'll be accepting. Nobody could really care.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that always strikes me as slightly kind of odd is that sportsmen generally, I'm not just talking about AFL players, if they're going to come out, they come out when they retire. They don't come out when they're playing. And I would have thought, you know, when they're at the height of their powers would be the one time they really could come out with absolutely no consequences at all, because people would just turn around and say, well, so what if he's a puff? He kicked 10 goals for us last week. And that's what's important.
And cash in on the promotional opportunities. That's the way I'd look at it.
I would say that it's likely to be what would happen in a number of, you know, certainly from the playing group and from the clubs themselves and even from the AFL. But I think players would feel a great deal of trepidation about how they'd be dealt with publicly, mm-hmm. their reputation publicly. They live in a fishbowl. It's extraordinary the amount of scrutiny and mm-hmm. pressure on them in that one respect. And, you know, sexuality is a pretty private thing for a lot of people, and yeah. they may not choose to have that discussed, dissected and critiqued in the media.
Yeah, but let's go. It's Corey Ullam here from the Australian Coalition for Equality. Let's just go back a sec to what you're talking about, how the AFL might deal with this. And I did some research to see that the Players' Code of Conduct, item 4.6, public and related responsibilities, vilification, includes sexual orientation.
Yeah.
Which is great. It also includes it about sexual orientation vilification as part of their football responsibilities. That's great. So players aren't going to vilify against other players. Mm-hmm. But then when you start looking at the rules of the game, where there is racial and religious vilification rules, it seems as though sexual orientation's dropped off the list. And so apart from the players' code of conduct, there's no other protections for people like club presidents, people like officials, people like umpires. And to my way of thinking, that sort of has double standards about the culture. Now, as the general manager of the Players Association that's responsible for culture, I'm interested to understand what is your view about the culture of the AFL for sexuality and sexual orientation, and what's the Players Association doing to make sure that not only the players, but people who interact with them are bound by these responsibilities to not vilify them if you get a player in the future that may or may not be gay?
I think you raise a very good point that any of the current legislation focuses entirely on the players and code of conduct or vilification or respect and responsibility towards women, which is a fairly recently introduced policy.
That's into the players' code of conduct or into the rules?
Into the rules.
Which affects everyone, not just players.
Yeah, that's the first policy that's actually covered the industry. So there's been a wide-ranging set of initiatives and programs around educating the industry generally about respect and responsibility. And I imagine that that would be the better place for the AFL to actually pick up on, any sort of vilification or any ongoing training about how we as a whole industry deal with it, not just players.
So just coming back, what's the Players Association doing to encourage the AFL to introduce these things so that the players aren't vilified against by people who are non-players?
Well, that's a really difficult thing for us to achieve. It's something that's...
Have you written to them? Are you asking them? Do you have a chat with their culture manager? Are you representing your players by doing this? Because if we've got people who aren't coming out, then it's going to be interesting to see whether they're going to feel like they can come out when players are covered off, but umpires and officials aren't.
Take a step back. Hang on a second, Corey. It's not as though the employees of the AFL, the coaches and others, aren't already obliged to adhere to Victorian and Australian law.
It seems Jeff Kennett isn't.
Well, Jeff made a silly comment, and there's no doubt about that, but I don't think there's a question about whether you can apply that sort of that as a breach of the law in itself.
But it's about any other company has a diversity policy that says this is not acceptable as part of our policy. The AFL has a diversity policy, essentially, that says it's only not acceptable from a player.
Yeah,
it's about time.
Well, that's all the Players Association probably can do. Actually.
Yeah, I think we're getting very slightly off the topic there, because I want to try and look at this in a positive light and look at what positively people like the Players Association can do. Because the way things are at the moment, it's a bit of a catch-22. I mean, I spoke to a couple of people from the AFL and the VCFL and so on and so forth, and at the AFL level, the attitude seems to be: if a player comes out, all these policies will come into play, and we will take care of them, which kind of puts the onus on the player to take the risk.
The current player.
Yeah, if there's a current player, then if they want to come out, they have to take the risk, they have to declare themselves, and then the mechanisms kick in. Whereas it seems to me that it would be more suitable if there were mechanisms in place, like have been put in place, for example, around racism, where the AFL took a proactive role and you know they had heroes and champions, and they made a big thing about getting racism out of sport, but they've not done anything similar about getting prejudice against sexual diversity out of sport. They haven't taken a proactive stance. It's all reactive.
They've also done proactive with women as well.
Yeah.
And so I should point out that they've been proactive only when they've basically been forced to.
Been kicked into it, yeah.
But let's before we get proactive,
I want to get Pippa's take on this. Pippa.
Yes. I'm listening.
What do you think? Do you think the AFL should take a proactive stance? And is there anything you can do as the AFL Players Association to push the AFL into taking that proactive stance?
Well, it's not. It's certainly not a dismiss topic, and there is action taken about this, or there is education weaved into the respect and responsibility policy. For example, some of the case training scenarios there talk about respect towards same-sex people. It is integrated, but it hasn't become a standalone topic on its own. Mm-hmm. And you're quite right that some of the other things, such as racial vilification, have come out of sort of watershed moments where there's been a response rather than a proactive approach to dealing with this. But I would comment that this is a topic that is on the agenda for the AFL, for the AFL Players Association, particularly in the way that we talk to players and in the way that they're educated. But I think it will come from, it will need to come from sort of, there would need to be some sort of a well-recognised need within the league for any education further or any action further that looked like sort of a whole community solution.
Richard.
Pippa, one of the lessons that I certainly see coming out of Matthew Mitchum's gold medal-winning dive in Beijing is he's talked very much about how he's come back from fighting depression and struggling with his sexuality, amongst other issues. And being out has allowed him to focus so much more clearly on his sport and achieving a personal best.
Yeah.
Can you see ramifications from that? Well, what can you take from that for in your role as the General Manager of People, Psychology and Culture at the AFLPA? Because certainly from a psychological viewpoint, coming out does really seem to allow athletes to function at a much higher and more professional level.
I would say anything that integrated an athlete's identity and let them feel comfortable with themselves, whole, freer to concentrate on the performance would have to be a good thing. To concentrate on their happiness, their wellness, and on the whole, let alone their performance, would have to be a good thing. And I would certainly encourage anybody who came to talk to me to consider that as an option if that were their choice, and consider how they would be supported through that. However, what you have to understand about AFL players, as opposed to somebody like Mitch or, say, any track athletes. I've certainly worked with track athletes before who have been dealing with their sexuality and whether or not to come out. They're not in the public eye in the way that AFL players are. So as soon as anything is made public about the personal life of a footballer, it's open to comment from the whole of the community, from the whole of the media.
Hello, Wayne Carey, yes.
Right. So you know, there's a whole other layer to this outside of their personal choice.
With respect, though, Matthew Mitchum's gold put him in the public light.
Now it has,
And did for that day, and that was dealt with quite professionally, I think. So whilst, yes, AFL players would have a more consistent presence in the public eye, I still think that can be managed properly if there's the support from the structures, the media team and the organisation to protect them.
I agree. It's more a question of the fear of what that might be like for them, that may be a preventative or prohibitive thing in allowing them to come out, not what would actually happen.
Tim.
No, I think that's a really valuable point, because the first AFL football player that comes out will be treated like a circus animal. There'll be all these stories about it, and it will unnecessarily draw attention to the fact their sexuality when they're actually successful at something else, and they actually have claimed success for something much more valid than something basically that they were born with. And I could understand if I was an AFL football player and I was gay and I didn't want to come out because I didn't want to be made a spectacle of. Mm-hmm. And I know the Matthew Mitchum thing happened recently, but that is a comparatively different scenario.
I mean, that's true for anybody coming out.
Yeah. Maybe we need a gay alumni. All the old players are no longer playing anymore. Come back out for a photo op. Tell us what your experience was, and they can be the test skin pick.
Well, why not?
I understand. Maybe we ought to be watching the footy show tonight, and maybe we'll get at least one of them.
We may. Look, Pippa, just to follow up on what you were saying.
Eddie, please return my calls.
Pippa, if one of the concerns about a player coming out from within the AFL and from the AFLPA is the public reaction to that, given that culture, Australian culture, particularly Melbourne culture, is shaped by the attitudes related to football, wouldn't it then actually be beneficial for the AFLPA and the AFL to work on positive public programs around sexuality, as has happened in the UK with Stonewall and the British Football Association, to actually be proactive again in helping change public attitudes about sexuality, so that when a player, or if a player does come out, there's actually been an active attempt to minimise homophobic backlash and reaction, which would, I think, be beneficial for all, both the spectators and the players.
In other words, to prepare the ground.
Yeah,
and I certainly think that that's entirely possible and not off the agenda by any stretch. Yeah. Where I can understand the reticences from the individual perspective of the player that, as you say, would be in the eye of the storm sort of thing if they were the first person to come out.
They definitely would.
But there is more that we can do around laying the groundwork. Yeah.
Okay, Pippa, look, we're going to have to leave it there because everybody here is obviously very into this topic. We've got an SMS here saying, Matthew Mitchum never said he was depressed about his sexuality. It was the pressure of diving and achieving what he could achieve. Mm. Okay, thanks very much for that, Pippa. I hope we'll talk again soon.
Nice one.
And maybe you can think about lining up a few players for me who are maybe not gay themselves, but are prepared to be champions for a campaign of anti-homophobia in the AFL.
I'll think about it for you.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, that was quite interesting, I thought.
A lot to talk about there. We only scratched the surface.
Indeed we did.
Disappointing to hear that they haven't written to the AFL, though. Everything starts with open communication. Until the Players Association, who's effectively the union, says we won't accept this, you need to do something about it, similar to the ASC, then what's going to happen? Nothing.
Yeah, now I just wanted to bring that in briefly. Your story this week, Richard,
Rachel Cook,
Rachel Cook's news editor story this week, the Australian Sporting Commission, which is the government body that hands out almost $500,000 to the AFL every year, is not happy with the way they're handling the Ken Campagnolo case and not getting their hands dirty, so to speak.
Exactly. It will be interesting to see how this plays out. Now, obviously, the ASC are waiting for the results of the Campagnolo case before they decide either way how they will respond. But it may well be that just by making public their concerns about the AFL's reticence to handle homophobia may well be the spur the AFL needs to actually suddenly respond. Because it comes back to what I said earlier. The AFL responded to racism and the treatment of women as a direct result of pressure.
They don't move without pressure. Okay, we're going to have to take a short break there.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is The Rainbow Report.
Yes, and this is Doug Pollard, my guests in the studio, Tim Wilson, Corey Earlham and Richard Watts. We were just talking to Pippa Grange of the AFL Players Association, not about specific gay footballers, but about the issue generally. Hi from South Australia, says Marcus. Interesting conversation on football about sexuality, brackets inclusive of bisexuality. Yes, we must make that very clear. I can't help but wonder how they cope with gender identity and when there'll be women players too. Well,
kind of brings up the whole Olympics and having that gender verification centre.
Yes, like that chair all the popes are supposed to sit on with a hole in the seat.
That's an interesting segue.
A very interesting segue. However, we're going to have to leave that one for now. Louise Pratt, the queer Labour senator from WA, gave her opening speech last night in the Senate and said, among other things, "I look forward to a time when we have removed at a federal level all discrimination on the grounds of gender identity and sexuality, a time when my partner isn't denied a passport because his gender's not recognised under our laws, when my friends' children all enjoy the same rights and protections under Commonwealth law, regardless of whether their parents are straight or gay, and a time when my gay and lesbian friends who wish to be legally married can be. Louise Pratt joins us on the line now. Good evening, Senator.
Good evening.
Well, thank you for that. I think you've almost got a round of applause around the station there for that. Well, that's Corey. He's enthusiastic about everything.
Indeed.
What kind of reaction did you get on the floor of the House?
I've had a positive reaction from my colleagues in a personal sense, and some raised eyebrows, I think, from the opposition. I've had a few comments that went something along the lines of, great speech, don't agree with anything you said.
Louise, Richard Watts here. I'm the editor of MCV here in Melbourne. A question, I guess, for a lot of people, the notion of catching up and dealing with sexuality is going to be an issue alone. In terms of gender identity, have you had any, I guess, any quiet word in your ear that maybe that's taking things a little too far, just one step at a time?
I don't even think people have actually got even that far with the issue.
They're still trying
They're
still to work out what it is.
Out what gender identity issues are. I've been a lesbian, I think, for a long time, and they're all now rather confused by the fact that I have a male partner. So I think they're still very much trying to get their head around the basics of it. And that's okay. Aram and I, we don't mind being on the public record and, I suppose, educating people.
Yeah, Tim.
Senator, I just want to know, does this mean you disagree with the ALP's policy on same-sex marriage and that you'd like to see the removal of discrimination against same-sex couples?
Yes, absolutely. But that's not to say I'm certainly bound by the party line on the issue, notwithstanding the fact that I wasn't in caucus at the time that the decision was made and wasn't able to say my piece at that point in the deliberations. But I certainly understand that I'm part of a binding Labor caucus and I'm bound by that decision. But I can't help but be personally offended by it because it affects me directly. But also I'm a long-term activist and I've seen many successes over the years of changes that people never thought would happen. So
now, Tim, is that
I'm in it for the long haul.
Tim, is that what you wanted to hear Penny Wong say the other week?
That's what I wanted to hear Penny Wong say on Q&A the other week. Why do you think you're saying that and she isn't?
I think we've just come from different places in politics. I cut my teeth to a certain extent on lesbian and gay activism, and therefore it's always been quite a direct part of my politics. If anything, for me now, the trouble, I need to be careful about making sure that I'm not sidelined into being a one-issue politician.
Yeah, because I mean that's the one thing Penny was always worried about, it being considered the lesbian senator.
Yes.
Look, I think your comments on the Australian Building Commission during your speech probably will get more focus than your comments about gay and lesbian and transgender people. Senator, I was interested to understand from you, back in July last year we had the Heriot Report, and I consider that to be one of the watershed moments of legal reforms and changes in society changes. What do you think it's going to take to get the same watershed moment for gender identity issues?
Heriot's currently doing a report, but I don't think it goes quite so far. It's because it's only dealing with identity issues. It's not really going quite so far as to the overall recognition framework. The problem is we haven't, I suppose, had the same kind of united activist groundswell. Not that the gay and lesbian community's always been very united, but there's just not the same activist base on gender identity issues, and that sometimes that's for quite obvious reasons in terms of once people have transitioned, they just want to get on with their life. They don't necessarily want to be visible and out because they just want to live life in their gender.
Yeah, I mean, that's the paradox of the whole transgender issue, isn't it? Because people who once have transitioned don't want to be out as being someone who's transitioned. They want to be out in their new gender. And you know, someone who's transitioned to male, for example, wants to be completely accepted as a man. Someone who's transitioned to female, completely accepted as a woman. And it kind of cuts across that to get up after this has all happened and say, well, actually, I'm a transgender woman or a transgender man.
Yes, that's right. But notwithstanding that, I think that there's now hope that people are more there are more people who are now more comfortable in being visible in their trans identity, and I really take that as a positive sign.
Okay. Going back to sexuality issues, Senator, we were talking earlier on the show about the report from the Senate inquiry into the family law amendments for de facto financial matters and other measures. Do you care to comment on what your thoughts are about that and how that will affect the passage of the legislation through the Senate?
I'm really worried about how that legislation is going to go in the Senate. We haven't really got a clear indication, I think, of the level of support for it, because between the Greens and the ALP, we're down a couple of votes. So
we don't think the opposition members support the bill.
Yeah, I think that there's some hope that will be the case. But I need to have more meetings with people to see how that settles down. I think it will certainly be difficult for the opposition not to support elements of it. I suppose the problem is how far they're prepared to go in bastardising it, I suppose.
Yeah, and how far some of them are prepared to stand by their principles and cross the floor, which is always possible. Certain of them have threatened to do that. Senator, we're going to have to leave it there this evening. We look forward to talking to you at greater length soon, especially when we see some more progress on all these issues. And thank you for your maiden speech. We all enjoyed it, and we're glad the House did too.
I look forward to joining you again sometime in the future.
Thank you, Louise. That was Senator Louise Pratt from WA. You're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9 with Doug Pollard.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is The Rainbow Report.
Welcome back. Yes, you're listening to The Rainbow Report with your host, Doug Pollard, and my guests tonight, Corey Earlham, Richard Watts and Tim Wilson. And now we have the moment you've all been waiting for, with her own inimitable look beneath the bonnet, this week the one worn by the Beijing Olympics. Please welcome Miss Kay Sarah.
I've long been a fan of water sports, though purely you understand as a voyeur. Unlike our Aussie sporting heroes, I made the difficult decision to boycott the Beijing Olympics. That silly little thing called human rights was keeping me up at night, and it seemed like the least I could do to relieve my conscience. News of the lip-syncing munchkin in the opening ceremony affirmed my decision. Not pretty enough, indeed. Blame Nikki Webster. Cute kids in pigtails should never be put on stage, and certainly not in front of a worldwide audience. No amount of therapy is going to cure that ego trip. Just look at Bindi Irwin. Speaking of pulling a shifty, I seem to remember reading somewhere that Hitler tried on something similar in the 1936 Berlin Olympics. Not so much cute kids, but very cute athletes. Just like the ruling elite of China, Adolf saw the Olympics as a grand propaganda opportunity, and to dress up his fascist ideals, he employed the cinematic talents of Leni Riefenstahl. Leni's keen eye for heroic men and women in the sweaty embrace of the Olympics fitted the Nazi agenda to a T. Today, her films of near-naked athletes romping around the track and field read like erotically charged soft porn, and surprise, surprise, has found a very special place in the hearts of many a budding homosexual. Can't help but think that Hitler would have been just a little pissed off at this perversion of his grand nationalist plan. At the time, he was certainly pissed off with the success of black athletes. But then, maybe he was bunkered down in a dark room during the Blitz, with one hand on the pause button and the other massaging his brackwurst. But I digress. My Beijing boycott was going great guns until, in a moment of weakness, I was ambushed by my local library. In the spirit of nationhood, they'd installed an enormous widescreen plasma monstrosity squarely in eyeshot of my favourite cooking books. No avoiding the Olympics now. Swimmers, weightlifters, pole vaulters, even BMX bandits, all in lurid high definition, slow motion. Talk about reliving Olympic glory, millisecond by millisecond in endless replay. But amidst this adrenaline junket, a glimmer of hope. Matthew Mitchum. Now there's a lovely young man with a lovely physique. Lenny would be pleased. thanks to the library, I caught a glimpse of Matthew in action. Incredible how he manages to do all that tumbling business mid-flight and then enter the pool with barely a splash. I was willing him on to throw caution to the wind and go for a bloody big bomb just to egg on the pool officials. He did one better. After picking up the gold medal for his seamless dive, Matthew went on to hug his mum and, just as important, hug his partner, Lachlan. Our Maddie carries the torch as the only openly gay medalist of the Beijing Olympics. Hard to believe, but there you are. He's out of the water closet and he's a winner. Can't think of a better protest for human rights in China, or anywhere else for that matter. Alas, Matthew's open-heartedness preaches to the converted. I seriously doubt whether vision of his partner's embrace was even shown on Chinese television. Let's face it, it only just made our TV sets. Actually, I wonder if Matthew got a congratulatory hug from our Mandarin-speaking Prime Minister. Now that's the money shot we're after. I'm Kay Sarar, and like I said, I'm into water sports, but only if I get to wear one of those fabulous Esther Williams-style swimsuits.
And that's the inimitable, absolutely inimitable, so I won't even try. Kay Sarar there with her take on the Olympics, Matthew Bitcherman coming out in sport.
I can just see her wearing an Esther Williams-style outfit, and particularly with the swimming cap with floral arrangement that goes with it.
Yes, but do you want to?
Now that would make something of a splash.
That's right.
Okay, Sally Goldner. Hello, Sally. Nice to know you're listening. Has written into us. Louise Pratt is the first person from either of the larger parties to mention gender identity since the election. That alone deserves a hoorah.
I agree.
And likewise, neither party has talked about an education revolution for working class same-sex couples to be able to tell them about these changes.
Well, it actually put it in a difficult position. I don't know if you guys remember back in 2000, there was the bill in Victorian Parliament on gender identity issues, and in the end the ALP was in a worse position than the Liberal Party, which took a better position. I wonder if what position she'll be in if that happens again.
Well, I'm sure it's one Kay Sarar would know all about. You may have heard, if you were listening to the news earlier on today, that we actually have a reporter working for us over at the Democrat Convention over in the USA. He's a new voice to Joy, Eric Williams, a lovely black man who paid us a visit a year or so ago. He brings us this brief report on the Democrat Convention about Barack Obama's surprise appearance at the convention.
Barack Obama's appearance on the Denver stage was not expected, as it followed the speech made by his vice presidential running mate. Joe Biden and Obama embraced on the big stage as the presumptive presidential nominee stuck to his theme of inclusion.
So we want to open up this convention to make sure that everybody who wants to come can join in the party and join in the effort to take America back. I think we are going to have a great night tomorrow night, and I look forward to seeing you there. God bless you.
On Thursday evening, Barack Obama will speak at Mile High Stadium in Denver to a crowd of over 70,000 on the final night of the convention. For Joy 94.9 News in Melbourne, Australia, I'm Eric Williams in New York.
He's got a beautiful voice, hasn't he? Absolutely classic American radio voice.
Why did we pick that clip, though? Why didn't we pick the one with Ted Kennedy earlier in the week where he actually talked about gay and lesbian issues?
Because we don't have that one.
Fair enough.
Very short answer. Nearest we could get was the bit about inclusion there, you know, which is a bit of a stretch, I guess.
What did he say?
He just talked about stopping any division in the community, and that included black and white and gay and straight and blah, blah, blah.
So it was inclusion, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was very explicit rather than that.
Yeah.
Some interesting dialogue, I guess, coming out of the US around the last week or so, too, about whether people are ready to accept a presidential or vice presidential candidate who's
openly
attracted. Yes. And so,
start with marriage first, Richard.
Sorry?
Start with marriage in California first, and then...
This is actually the second time a poll has come out saying that people wouldn't mind, in fact, that if their president was gay. In fact, there was a poll a while ago saying we didn't mind if they were gay, but they still had to believe in God. That was a more important thing than their sexuality.
Well, that's one of the big factors in the USA. You can't imagine an atheist president being elected.
But you can imagine a gay one.
Yeah.
So what we need is a gay pastor to stand for leadership of the Democrats, perhaps, and then perhaps we'll get somewhere.
No, somebody... I want to see them at the Republican convention. I think that'd be much more entertaining.
Much more interesting.
Do you want a log cabin Republican as the next president?
Oh, God. Spare me. Unfortunately, that's going to have to be it for this week. My thanks to my guest tonight, Corey Ellen from ACE, Richard Watts from MCV, Tim Wilson from IPA, Pippa Grange from AFLPA. Absolutely acronym heaven in here tonight.
Tonight's show has been brought to you by the letters.
Yeah, and Senator Louise Pratt, and of course, Kay Sirrah. Not forgetting you for all your messages. Don't forget you can now access podcasts of the program at joy.org.au, as well as the Rainbow Reporter blog at rainbowreporter.com. Big thanks to my producer, Bianca Johnston, technical producer, Michael, and I'll be back next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.